All right, good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to call the meeting of the Property and Local Tax Division to order. There is barely a quorum present. May I have a motion to approve the minutes from March 2nd, 2020?
So moved, Madam, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Vang. Representative Vang moves the minutes, and they are so moved. Okay. I'm sorry. Representative Vang moves approval of the minutes from March 2nd. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Those opposed? And the minutes prevail. Okay. Before we get started, folks, I just wanted to call your attention to a couple things in your packet. We have some follow-up information from the Watershed District that was requested. So that's in your packet. Take some time to review that. And then we also have, per Representative Herr's request, we have a pretty helpful spreadsheet with regards to the 2020 local option sales tax bills. This takes into account a variety of different factors and allows for some basis of comparison. So as we continue to take on our theme of local option sales taxes and getting through all 22 of them, this might be a helpful resource. Representative Hertaus, you had a quick comment with regards to the local option sales tax bills.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And yes, members, as we have seen with some of the past information provided, we have been on a very much increased trajectory with the number of local option sales tax requests that have been coming before the committee. Last year, Chair Loeffler had discussed with me some of the things that were being advocated to tighten that up a little bit. Some of those changes were implemented. But it of concern to me, and I think it should be to everybody, is that at the trajectory we're going on, we may as well just have a uniform 8% or higher sales tax rate all across the state. And so part of the grand bargain or the grand deal with regard to the Minnesota miracle was that the local option to have increased sales tax was surrendered and needed legislative approval in exchange for sharing the wealth, as was implemented some 40 plus years ago. And so I would hearken to all of the members to be thinking about this and where we should be going forward with regard to an ever-increasing amount of local option sales tax requests. This spreadsheet also kind of points out a lot of the base net tax capacity, and it would appear that if any of you have this little blue book that is available about the tax handbook, you'll see about 4% of the cities right now have local option sales taxes in effect at the current moment. I also noticed that most of them that have this are also LGA recipients and not necessarily the ones who are not LGA recipients. So food for thought. I think this is a bipartisan effort. I've often commented and exclaimed to Chair Carlson that of many committees that we all get to serve on, I feel this is one of the committees that is least partisan and is a good committee with regard to moving policy forward for the long term. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, thank you, Representative Hertaus. Ms. Dalton, before we kind of move on to our agenda, anything else you want to mention with regards to the spreadsheet that you were that you put together for us?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would just direct your attention to probably the last five rightmost columns, because that gives you kind of a tax rate, tax base per capita, LGA or CPA per capita, whether they are seeking bonding, and other special revenue sources that they have for kind of general purposes. And then at the very bottom, for comparison purposes, we have the city average and the county average for tax rate, tax base, and aid per capita.
Wonderful. Thank you. I found it to be very helpful, so thank you for taking the time to put that together. Other member questions? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe to Ms. Dalton, do we do any follow-up, say, 2-3 years down the road from, you know, when people requested when cities requested the sales tax and then how it produced, I mean, some are going to be probably very disappointed, maybe, or are we pretty close in making our projections?
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck, we don't do any formal follow-up. We occasionally have had cities come back to us because the revenue from the sales tax hasn't generated what they thought it would, and then they've looked for extensions. We've also had a few that have gone off sooner than anyone had anticipated because they raised more revenue. Mm-hmm. Part of the problem is we don't have really good numbers on a city-by-city basis for what is collected.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Well, thank you for the information as we kind of move forward into our agenda today. We do have a full agenda. We have 5 bills. We'd like to keep each bill to approximately 15 minutes or so. I'll appoint myself as the official timekeeper as we kind of move forward. So out of respect for everybody here today, if we can keep our comments succinct and to the point, that would all be very much appreciated. First bill up for today is House File 3875. Representative, Tu Zhang is going to move House File 3575. And we have Representative Pazin coming down to present his bill for us here today. Tu Zhang.
3875.
What did I say?
3575.
Oh, that's my dyslexia, sorry. 3875. I really don't have dyslexia, but sometimes I do. Okay. Representative Pazin, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
If you could please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Representative John Poston from District 9A, and I am presenting House File 3875. House File 3875 allows the city of Wadena to impose a 0.25% local sales tax to raise $3 million to fund the Wadena Library Rehabilitation Project as long as it's approved by its voters. So having said that, I've got the mayor with me. I've got the librarian from Wadena with me and the city administrator. So who would like to start? Okay, we'll start with the librarian first, Renee Frethem.
Welcome to all of you. As you speak, could you please introduce yourself for the record?
Good afternoon. I'd like to thank you for consideration of this sales tax proposal. I'm Renee Frethem, branch manager of the Wadena City Library. It's my 19th year of employment at the library, and I have a fabulous job. It's very fulfilling. However, the roles that public libraries fill in our communities have changed dramatically in the last decade. This ever-evolving information hub we call the library is not for simply checking out books anymore. In addition to the nearly 55,000 items we check out in a year's time, we provide access and assistance to patrons needing computer use, internet, and Wi-Fi. We provide tax forms, legal forms, assist patrons with resumes, resume development, and job searches. We proctor exams for the growing number of college students and people taking licensing exams. We are a registered QAC for the 2020 census. We host legacy events preserving Minnesota's arts and cultural heritage. We have weekly story times for children, monthly book discussion groups for adults, winter reading programs, and summer reading programs for children and adults to at least maintain, if not improve, their reading skills during the summer months. We also provide microfilm and various local history materials for patrons' reference. This may sound like a lot, but I'm probably forgetting a few things, but what I want to bring to your attention is that we are doing all of these things in a little over 4,000 square feet of space. Some things like legacy events and book discussions we can't have at the library because of inadequate space and no private or quiet spaces. Our existing building is one big open area with no lower level and one closet for storage. The original IT cables are 30 years old and buried in the concrete slab that the building sits on, therefore making upgrades a bit challenging. The city of Wadena was able to acquire an existing building one block from our location now that will provide us with double the square footage on the street level. It also has a lower level we plan to utilize for teen space, meeting and study rooms, and hopefully a brand new maker space for STEM programming. We look forward to having the ability to offer classes to our patrons, such as how to better understand various technologies, phones, tablets, computers, offer 3D printing, green screen video services, and to simply have private spaces for meetings, tax preparation, and depositions, requests we've always had to turn away. Libraries have evolved into being safe meeting and information hubs of their communities and will continue to grow and expand services well into the future. Our goal is that our new space will provide better access to resources, services, and programs on site that will enable our patrons to learn new skills, obtain information 24/7 through up-to-date user-friendly virtual services, and encourage lifelong learning to ensure the opportunity for an enhanced quality of life for many years to come. Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. George Dice, mayor of Wadena, in my sixth year. Wadena is kind of a unique city. We sit on the border of two counties. So we have a small subdivision that is in Ottertail County, and then the main part of the city is in Wadena County. We are serviced by the Kitchigami Regional Library, of which I am a board member of. We had the distinction of having three counties come into our library, one that we can track, the County of Wadena, and then Ottertail and Todd County, who just present their regional library cards to use our facilities. We are basically a regional library for the area. We are the only library in the County of Wadena. We are, as Renee said, looking to basically triple our size, two times on the main floor and then the bottom floor. The building we acquired from a longstanding family from Wadena was a bank building, structurally very sound. So we've been able to share off a lot of the cost of that by acquiring that building. We are in the process of fundraising. I believe we are at about $800,000 right now through private funds that have come in, and we will continue to raise as we go through, regardless of whether the voters, if this committee approves it and it moves on through the chain and ends up at our voters, our plan is to still continue to raise funds privately.
The City Administrator, Jeanette Bauer.
Thank you. A couple of items that we did want to stress is that in addition to fundraising, we've talked about a levy that through a bond and doing a levy through our general fund. However, as you know, that would tax the property owners. The property owners are already paying for the library budget through their taxes right now. Our goal would be to capture all of the people who come into town to shop and to capture the revenue off of those folks rather than just our property owners so that not all the funding ends up through their pocketbook.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and we'll answer any questions.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Member questions? Okay. Yes, Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, it sounds like a really great project, and we don't hear too many library requests, you know, so it's a nice thing to say yes to.
And I'll just quickly point out, within your the resolution you brought forward, it does specify that the city currently serving 2,286 active patrons inside the city limits, and then another 1,500 countywide. And then another 1,500 that are even outside of the county. So clearly showing that regional significance. Other member questions? Oh, yes, Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question to the testifiers would be, do you have bonding capacity to do this project out of your, and service it with your general fund?
Representative Poston. Are you asking out of the general fund so that we would not have to levy our taxpayers, our property taxpayers?
Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, my question is, can you generate the funds necessary to do this project and go forward with a city library and use your bonding authority as a city to raise the funds to do the project and service the debt on those bonds with general levy dollars?
We could, we do have the bonding capacity, yes, we do. However, it would be a levy then to our taxpayers. We do not have the funds available, the general fund, without passing that cost on.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Further questions? Seeing none. With that, Representative Zhang renews his motion that House file, I'm sorry, Representative Poston. Am I saying that right?
Yep.
Poston.
Yes,
I'll keep practicing. Closing comments.
Mr. Chair, I just appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you all for being here today. It's very much appreciated. With that, Representative Zhang renews his motion that House File 3875 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. And with that, the bill is laid over. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Next up, we have House File 3792. Representative Wilgamont may have a motion to move Representative Wilgamont's bill in the order before the committee.
So move, Mr. Chair.
Representative Vang, thank you very much. Moves that House File 3792 be laid over for possible inclusion within the division report. We have the bill before us. Representative Wilgamont, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. I'm here this afternoon to present House File 3792, which would give the City of St. Cloud legislative authorization to conduct a referendum in the November 2020 general election. The voters will be asked to approve five separate questions authorizing the imposition of a 1/2 cent increase to the existing 1/2 cent tax for four road improvements, plus the expansion and improvement of the city's municipal athletic complex. And with me, Mr. Chair and members, I brought two testifiers from the City of St. Cloud to further explain why we are here asking for your support for House File 3792.
Great. Gentlemen, if you could please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members. Matthew Staling, St. Cloud City Administrator.
I am Tony Goddard. I'm the Director of Community Services and Facilities for the City of St. Cloud.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to be here this afternoon. When this new statutory framework was adopted last year, Mayor Kleiss and I sat down at our City Council to discuss what our priorities are in terms of capital investment in our city. And really it comes down to roads and transportation continues to be a top priority for the City of St. Cloud. City of St. Cloud, our population is 68,000, but during the day, we serve a population of over 175,000 with students, with people who commute to St. Cloud to work, people visiting our hospitals and retail, entertainment, restaurants. So really, the opportunity to propose sales tax is critically important to cities like St. Cloud that serve a much broader population. We have four specific transportation proposals, and they are all arterial roadways that are vital to connect north and south St. Cloud and east-west corridors. The first project is 2nd and 3rd Street. This is a gateway from Highway 15 into our downtown, and this is vitally important. This includes an expansion of the roadway. It would enable visitors to St. Cloud and people who live in the St. Cloud metro area to get to downtown and to get to retail establishments as well. We believe that all of these improvements also have a positive economic impact on our region. The second project is 16th Street South, connecting Traverse Road and from 22nd Street South to 6th Avenue South. This serves an important corridor with schools, St. Cloud State University, as well as retail corridors. Third project is County Road 136, Oak Grove Road, Main Prairie Road. This is a north-south corridor. That would be a secondary corridor that could alleviate congestion and get traffic north and south St. Cloud quicker and safer. The final road project is Lincoln Avenue and 4th Street Southeast. This project is critical to our continuing efforts to encourage economic development on St. Cloud's east side. And we believe that this project would also serve the city of Sauk Rapids as well. And I will defer now to Mr. Goddard to discuss our municipal athletic facility.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The city of St. Cloud has a municipal athletic complex that is rare in the state, and it encompasses two sheets of ice in the arena and two baseball parks. It has been serving the state and the region since the early 1970s and is in need of some updating now, which is our desire through this sales tax mechanism. We also have, as you may know, a request in for bonding for the MAC also. This, we believe, has an impact far beyond a community recreational facility in that it's used by six different high school teams, it's used by two colleges and one university. And notably, of those post-secondary institutions, two of them are state institutions. Our facility is the home field for the St. Cloud State Husky baseball and St. Cloud Technical College Cyclones baseball. So, excuse me. So we believe that this project is providing direct benefit to the state of Minnesota. Absent these city-owned facilities, it's not clear that those state institutions would be able to continue their intercollegiate sports programs. Formerly, until the construction of the National Hockey Center, the city also provided the facility for St. Cloud State Husky Hockey. So we believe we have provided great service to the state and can continue to do that with additional funds. And along the same lines, high schools in the area are saved the cost of constructing arenas, which are expensive to build and operate, because we are providing that service through this city-owned facility. So we believe that the net public benefit is strong and that there is a direct state interest in helping us to improve the municipal athletic complex. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak about this project.
Thank you, gentlemen. Member questions. Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Don't take it personal, but here I go again. I see here, according to this spreadsheet we have, that your local government aid program payment for 2020 is $13,393,000. What is your total city general fund budget?
Our total city general fund budget, let's see, our total budget is about $124 million. Our general fund budget, I believe, is right around $80
million. Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I heard you testify earlier about your daytime population and your nighttime population. Is it your contention that using this type of tax would be in the city's best interest in that you would generate a lot of revenue from people who don't live there?
Absolutely. That's exactly right. I would add to that that the city of St. Cloud also has a number of very large institutions that are not subject to property tax. St. Cloud State University, St. Cloud Community Technical College, St. Cloud Hospital, and CentraCare. So those are big institutions that we support, and employees use our roads to get to work, students use our roads to get to school. They use our facilities, as Mr. Goddard described. So, yes, we believe that this is an appropriate vehicle.
Okay. Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one last follow-up question. So I see you've got $113.8 million of projects. I'll ask you the same question I asked the last group. do you have the bonding capacity within your existing general fund? Do you have the bonding capacity as a city to bond for this project, and would you be able then to service the debt by changing your levy for the property taxpayers in St. Cloud?
Mrs. Dalton.
We do not have the capacity under our current current property tax rate. We would have to significantly raise property taxes in order to afford projects of this scope.
One last question?
Yeah. So to be clear, you do have the bonding authority and capacity to be able to borrow the money, but you would have to raise your levy to service the debt.
Mr. Dalton.
Very significantly.
Thank you.
Okay. Other member questions? I have a quick one. I think this is going to be for Mr. Goddard. Can you speak to, as far as the information, can you speak to what the expansion and repairs would be to the athletic complex? Can you give us a brief, just real brief, one-minute description of what that would entail?
Yes, it would essentially three things. The arena building would have an expansion that would add additional and higher quality locker rooms, plus what in the hockey field they refer to as dry land training. So we would have the ability to, for the athletes to train in the building, which they currently do not. We would also install state-of-the-art refrigeration equipment and abandon the existing Freon-based system. It also would reconstruct the older of the two baseball stadiums, which was built in 1971, is not up to a current standard of accessibility and is in some disrepair. So this would allow us to reconstruct that. And then lastly, the project would convert both baseball fields to synthetic turf, which would allow particularly the public entities that use the baseball facility are limited by law when their seasons can be. So in a late spring, for example, high school players often have a very limited season. A couple of years ago, it was reduced to 3 weeks. And synthetic turf allows an extension of the season.
Thank you. Member questions? Anybody here from the audience here to testify on House File 3792? Okay, see none. Representative Jaskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have to ask this. So an athletic complex, would you characterize that as a want or a need?
Mr. Goddard.
I would characterize it as a need, particularly with the older of the two baseball fields. We're not at all certain how long it'll survive. And this baseball complex has served the state high school league and both Minnesota State institutions for tournament use, partly because we have two fields. And so losing one field and going down to a single field would make it impractical for those tournament functions. And so I would describe that as a need. Excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay. Representative Wolgamont, closing comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members.
All right, wonderful. Who moved this one? Representative Vang? Representative Vang renews her motion that House File 3875 be laid over for... Oh, I have that wrong. 3792. See. Be laid over for possible inclusion within the division reports. With that, the bill is laid over. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us today. Next up, we have Representative Tice's bill, House File 3776. Can I get a motion to move that bill, please?
So moved.
Wonderful. Representative Runbeck, thank you. Moves that House File 3776 be laid over for possible inclusion within the division report. We have the bill before us. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm not going to take a lot of time because I want to make sure that you have opportunities to understand the project, well, the projects that are involved. So with that, I'm going to just briefly tell you that this is for a 0.05 half percent. It's Monday. I'm sleep deprived.
I'm with you. It's the changing of the clocks. You know, that daylight savings time gets me every time. So
I know.
That excuse is good for at least a week. So
I think so. So I'm going to use it today to my advantage. But basically, just to take care of some of the projects that Way Park is hoping to complete for the residents. So with that, I think the mayor drew the first straw.
Excellent. Well, welcome. Welcome to all three of you. As you speak, please introduce yourself first for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Rick Miller. I'm the mayor of Wade Park. You may ask why we're here today asking for a local option sales tax. I've got a few bullet points that I'd like to address. Wade Park is located in central Minnesota. It is part of the St. Cloud metro cities that include St. Cloud, Sartell, St. Joseph, Sauk Rapids, St. Augusta, and Wade Park. Our cities are all connected. Many do not know when they are in one city or the next. For Wade Park, this is more evident with the Crossroads Mall, Shields, and the food court are in Wade Park. But when you walk into JCPenney's, which is right next door, the rest of the mall and that is in St. Cloud. The impacts of being a small community of 7,700 people in a regional center place additional burdens on our city that become our responsibilities to manage. Long-range regional planning efforts have identified over $45 million in projects in Wade Park. The city looks to sales tax as an equitable way to pay for these projects without overburdening our taxpayers, as about approximately 80% of the sales tax generated in Wade Park is by other than Wade Park residents. And probably most important in this is, I heard mention of local government aid. The city of Wade Park receives no local government aid like the neighboring cities, therefore limiting our ability to fund adequate needs. With that, I will turn it over to my police chief, Dave Bentrude.
Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Dave Bentrude, police chief of the city of Wade Park. Mm-hmm. Appreciate the opportunity to share a little bit on the public safety issues that we're dealing with. As the mayor shared, we're a smaller community, 7,700 resident population, serving a daytime population in excess of 30,000, which has come from various chamber data and things like that. We have about 120,000 trips on our roadways. We have some major roadways through Wade Park, and that impacts what we do. Most police departments, most cities with a 7,700 population and don't need 18 police officers in a $3 million budget. So from a regional perspective, we provide coverage to our local alternative high school, which is we are part of the St. Cloud School District along with the city of St. Joseph, St. Cloud obviously, and the city of Clear Lake, which is in Sherburne County. About 90% of the students at ALC come from outside of the city of Wade Park, and of that, about 15 to 20% come from outside the St. Cloud School District. So we're providing that activity. You know, as I shared, the regional population increase, we provide in response to Quarry Park, which is it's a county park within the city of Wade Park, which creates some activity for us. And we are also looking to try to partner with the school district and expand our capacity for youth programming in our south side area, particularly around Discovery School, where it comes to being able to offer recreational activities like a youth soccer program, basketball, softball, and some of those types of activities. And maybe coincidentally, as the mayor shared, 80% of our sales tax revenue comes from outside of our city. 80% of the people that we arrest come from outside of the city of Wade Park. In other words, they do not live in our city, which really negatively impacts our crime rates, which when you look at crimes per 100,000, for part one crimes, which tends to be the more serious crimes, Wade Park is the highest in the state on a per capita basis. So we're dealing with a lot of financial crime that most cities our size are not dealing with. And I would just, I guess, end with that. We within our police department, I think every office we have right now is, we're double bunked. We got multiple desks, And so there is a significant space need within our police agency.
Thank you, Chief.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Shauna Johnson, and I am the city administrator for the city of Waite Park. And I just want to talk just briefly with you about what projects we've identified that we would like to utilize the sales tax for. We really have looked at four projects that we believe have significant regional impacts to our area. Each one of these projects, we believe, provides different regional services that we do provide to the region, including transportation, parks, trails, and public safety. So one of the first projects that we're looking at is our 10th Avenue Regional Corridor. This is a north-south connector that connects the cities of St. Cloud and Sartell to our retail portion of our community. Many of the big box retail sites are in Waite Park, including Home Depot, Menards, Fleet Farm, and then we have two hotels and a conference center as well, in addition to our Quarry Park and to our soon-to-be-open Ledge Amphitheater that will house about 5,000 outdoor seats. And so that is a significant amount of the transportation need for the community. This particular project has been part of the region's area planning organization's plan for probably over 15 years. And there's a significant amount of right-of-way that's needed to be purchased. So the price tag for that project is $15 million. In addition to that, we also have regional trail connections. One of the things that we're very fortunate to have in Waite Park is we have the Lake Wobegon Trail on the north side of our community. And in the future, we will have the Glacial Lakes Trail that will be on our western south side of our community. There's a desire for the region. It's been in the area planning organization's plans for many years to have those two trails connected. In order to do that, we need to construct the remaining portions of that trail. And so we're looking at, with this, to spend up to $10 million over 5 years for those regional trail connections. The significance that this has, not only for the St. Cloud Waite Park region, but also for the state, is that you'll be able to hop on a bike in Willmar and go all the way to Duluth with these trail connections when they're in place. Our third project that we're looking at is what we're calling our Southside Regional Park Development. I really look at it as a potential to expand some of the park features that we already have on our south side with Quarry Park. We also have our amphitheater on that side. But as our chief has mentioned with the school district, we actually are sandwiched between the new Tech High School in St. Cloud and Kennedy. And so there's a significant amount of recreational needs to identify on that south side of our community for that region. In addition to that, we want to add some complementary types of uses for that facility, which would include camping, which would be a nice amenity for the area for to use with our amphitheater and with the Quarry Park, as well as some other types of uses that would assist with some of the recreational things such as soccer and some basketball courts and things like that that will help some of the needs for some of the students. Lastly, we are looking at a public safety facility. We're looking at up to $12 million for that facility. As the chief mentioned, we're out of room, and a lot of those needs we believe are based off of our regional needs in public safety. For the community, our size, our needs in our public safety areas really are enhanced by our additional population that we service. Thank you.
Thank you. Member questions? Representative Brumback.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I should have asked this of the previous groups, too. But so your public safety facility and I guess any of the infrastructure, basically, that you're proposing, do you have built-in revenues that will pay for the repair and maintenance of those projects 10, 20, 30 years down the road, as opposed to, say, coming back for another sales tax or what have you for those costs?
Ms. Johnson, are you going to field that one? Okay.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, member, yes, that would be what we would have. We would use our general fund to service those things and have that planned.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you. Okay.
Quick question with regards to perhaps a question for the chief with regards to the public safety facility. So quite a large police force already, and there's a good description as to the reasons why. The new facility will accommodate the current staffing. Is there some room for growth with the proposed new public safety facility?
Yes, my hope would be that we would, if approved and if we're able to move forward, that we would allow for and accommodate future growth. Looking to secure a federal grant to be able to do just that, the COPS hiring grant, and we'll see where that goes tonight, in fact. But so, yes, there is a need to look to the future. We are a part of the I have an investigator assigned to the Central Minnesota Human Trafficking Task Force. We're dealing with some more urban issues that we are going to need to staff adequately for moving forward.
Thank you. Other member questions? Seeing none. Members from the audience here to speak on this bill. Okay. Representative Tice, closing comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for your time, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Wonderful. Well, thank you all for being here today. With that, Representative Rumbeck renews her motion that House File 3776 be laid over for possible inclusion within the division report. And with that, so moved. Next up, we have House File 3661. Representative Kreisha, but I believe, he's here. Welcome. Come on down. Glad you can make it. Can I have a motion to move or to get Representative Kreisha's bill before the committee?
So moved.
Thank you, Representative Rumbeck. Moves that House File 3661 be laid over for possible inclusion within the division report. We have the bill before us. Representative Kreisha, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
If you would please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just for clarification, just so I understand the process, we're not in capital investment, so we're just asking for permission basically to have this local option sales tax that would be included in your division report up to Chair Markowitz. Is that correct?
Correct. Representative Kreisha, that is exactly correct. Yes.
Okay,
we'll be laying over this bill along with all the other local option sales tax requests for consideration.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to make sure I confirm the process. I have with me two testifiers, the City Administrator John Rademacher and the Mayor Greg Zilka. Just to highlight this in front of you, so as I understand the process, what we're here for is not necessarily to debate whether or not the project is good or bad. That's why I was moved out of capital investment. Certainly happy to talk about what that project will be, but to rely on your role, which is to allow the voters to have permission to have that conversation, to allow the local people who we represent have the conversation they so much want to have, which is this the right thing to do, good or bad, and allow them to have that. So with that, you have in front of you, you have a proposal, because we have to follow the legislative the rules, which is to ask your permission to do that. And with that, I would like to introduce my two testifiers to talk about why they want to have this conversation locally and why we're in front of you asking for your permission to take this back to them.
Welcome, gentlemen. If you could please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you, Chair and committee members. My name is John Rademacher. I'm the city administrator in Little Falls. Before you, our proposal is a local option sales tax of 0.5%. Which would be utilized to help finance a community recreational facility, community center. With that, we have had numerous requests and consideration for this project over the last few decades in our community, and we've identified a few areas that are specific to needs that we have for a facility that we don't have existing in the city of Little Falls. The primary cores of this building are going to include a field house athletic space, as well as a meeting space, multi-purpose space for meetings, and also a childcare, a space that could be developed into childcare for daycare. In our community, we are at a deficit of specifically 225 spots within the city of Little Falls, and the surrounding region, we have a deficit of about 600. So the challenges that we're seeing around daycare are in that our providers are not able to finance both the operating and the debt service of a facility, of renovating a facility or building a facility within our community at the market rates that they could charge and recoup. So our efforts from the community side is to incorporate this as part of the space, as well as another need that has been identified in our community around meeting space, conference space. We have a number of smaller venues within our city that can host up to probably 100 to 150 people comfortably. Unfortunately, we don't have a space that's within our city limits that hosts up to about 300 people, and which severely limits our ability to host conferences and events in our community, whereas we are a really central location in the state. We're at the intersection divergence of highways 371 and 10, as well as State Highway 27 that runs right through the middle of our community. So we're very centrally located. We have had numerous requests from venues to host sites within our community. Our Convention and Visitors Bureau would testify that they've actually been rejected for a number of applications to host events just because we don't have a space to house that range of 150 to 300 people for different events, which limits us in the traffic and opportunities that we have for our community. The last component is a multi-purpose athletic space. We would have gymnasiums as well as an indoor track and that could be used for sporting events. Our high school, local high school, is very limited in its ability for gym space. They're constantly having struggles in managing that gym space opportunities for their events. And they don't have any space on an interior base to do any sort of track and field or other athletics for the inside. They have looked to neighboring communities like in St. Cloud or Foley, Minnesota, to have to go to for practices. And considering the weather and the seasons for those events, they often run into the opportunities where those spaces are also booked out in full, and they don't have opportunities to practice and utilize those events. Our interest in that has also been other communities that have had a facility similar to ours, utilize them year round and for events that are not just catering to Minnesota State High School League or their local area high schools. They are serving lots of sports of lots of different age groups. We have a need to not include a fitness center type space. We've actually had key stakeholder groups and invited the fitness center owners to be a part of that. They are very well serving our community. We are not incorporating a fitness center to this, but there is no good spaces in our town to do an indoor walking for mostly our senior population, of which we do have a pretty significant senior population. So that they end up having to go to the local Walmart or into the middle school to do that interior walking, and it's just not conducive to the types of activities that they'd want to use. So our efforts for this space are really to try to generate something that is intergenerational, multi-generational in its needs and service, and has regional significance on the basis of that we'd be hosting these conference events, meeting events, athletic events for not just our local community, and also that childcare need, because we do serve a broader population. A lot of our residents, while they may live in Little Falls, they go to St. Cloud or Brainerd areas to work, and we also have St. Cloud area and Brainerd-Baxter area residents that live in those communities and work in Little Falls. So we have that kind of interflow between all of them. So all of these would serve well to our region, and I will turn it over to the mayor to speak more.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, committee members. Thank you so much for this opportunity to sit before you and discuss this. I am a lifetime resident of Little Falls. I was in retail for 41 years. And I've also been active in the community for about the last 30 years. I've had that opportunity to be in front of people and listen to their needs and some of their wants in our community for many years. And these things that are a part of this would serve many of them. The gym space would not just be for the athletics of the schools. It's for the community services part. It's for pickleball. It's for volleyball for residents that don't use it as a sport. And also we're talking about a water park facility. The point was previously made, the fact that a lot of the communities north and south of us get local option sales tax from residents outside of their communities, which we are one of those. We're not a retail hub,
And so a lot of our residents need to go north to Brainerd or south to St. Cloud, Sauk Rapids, Sartell for their needs. And I'm one of them. And when we go there, we pay that local option sales tax. I have no problem with that. We need this opportunity in our community to bring back the young families. We hear it all the time at council meetings. There's just nothing for kids here to do. The fifth graders have to practice basketball late at night. So this will help our community. We're doing a great job, I believe, as a community with manufacturing and the job market. And now we need to get some of our residents, our younger residents who go off to college, we need our community to be a little more attractive to bring them back and fill those jobs. Thank you.
Thank you. Member questions? Yes, Representative Rumbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could staff explain what the notation, the two, after the half-cent tax is in existing local tax rate column?
Which line?
Item number.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Two.
Yes, on the chart, not the.
The chart from
charts,
Representative Herr, which is really good.
That's a wheelage tax.
Okay.
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck, a two indicates that the tax being shown there is the county imposed transportation and transit general levy tax.
Representative Runbeck.
But, Mr. Chair, and my reading is that it's a total then of a half cent sales tax. With the one that would be approved, it would be, that's a half. So what is the county tax?
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck, the half cent, the city is proposing a half cent sales tax. The county has already imposed a half cent sales tax. So within the city, there would be a combined city-county rate of 1% if this was enacted.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Now, so we just have to add. We're adding whatever we do today to that column.
Yes. Correct.
All right,
correct.
Thank you.
Chair Marquardt.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And Representative Cresha, in his opening statements, talked about that you're here today so that ultimately you can get this to the local voters to decide. So the big question is, why do you even have to come to the legislature to do this? You know, why don't we just allow them to do that? And, you know, back in 1971, when local government aid was established, and Representative Hertaus was referring to this earlier, at that time, the local government aid was seen as the great equalizer, sort of in tax bases, that with the idea roughly that you're going to get the same service, roughly the same cost, kind of across the state. And at the time, local option sales taxes were prohibited because of that. And so the big thing is, you know, kind of this regional, because when you go to pay for services through a sales tax, what you're trying to do is avoid, you're shifting onto other property tax. But in fact, we've heard every bill we've heard so far, the idea is to shift to the non-residents of your city some of the burden that they're coming in and doing services. And the gentleman also mentioned that Little Falls, for example, doesn't have this great economic kind of engine, so to speak. So a lot go to Brainerd, and you're saying we need to try to get people back to Little Falls. And that really kind of lends itself to why we have to talk about these, because not every city has that economic wherewithal versus regional or sub-regional centers, and it creates winners and losers. And I don't know if Little Falls is a loser in this.
Never.
No, I'm not saying it. But, I mean, it sounded like a little bit that we're trying to get people back because of maybe a sales tax that another city has. And that really gets the kind of the crux of the problem with these local option sales taxes. And, you know, when you talk, and so when we look at things regionally, it's really got to have a regional benefit, in my mind, because do the residents who, the non-residents of the city who are paying for this, do they also benefit from that? You know, kind of a fairness question. But so, you know, I think there's always a question of why, you know, it's local control. But the fact is the state back almost 50 years ago kind of realized that when you start doing these, you're going to upset the apple cart when it comes to trying to keep LGA's credibility and the reason why it came about. The idea to kind of equalize, it throws that out of equilibrium. And it's probably a larger thought process for this committee that we're going to have to deal with. But nothing specific to Little Falls, but that's kind of just some of the comments that I heard kind of sparked my interest on this is why, in fact, we need to look at these as a state.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Representative Kreshaw, you had a follow-up?
Yes, if I could. And thank you, Chair Marquardt. That's exactly why I couched the comments I did, because where we are sitting, and it's a broader problem that we have in Little Falls, we have Camp Ripley, which a huge facility, very lucky to have them, but they take up a lot of daycare slots. And, you know, so then we have the pass-through of people traveling to Brainerd, traveling to St. Cloud. People are passing through our community as they go to the Lakes area. The Scandia Lakes area, which is our second highest township in the county for property tax value, is 20 miles north. And so as everyone's coming through, we're trying to capitalize on all that loss and competing outside of us. And the voters are asking for permission. You know, how do we equalize this? Because our kids are going to Brainerd. They're going to St. Cloud for sporting events late at night. We have facility competition with Foley and so forth. We didn't make these rules, and you know, we're playing by them. And I would think that, and I know Chair Marquardt and others in this committee have asked those broader questions. We should solve that, but not at the expense of allowing us to go to our voters now. And we didn't create those other rules. We're just responding to what has already happened.
Thank you. Other member questions. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would like to piggyback onto Chair Marquardt's concerns, because there are counties in greater Minnesota that have no retail volume really to speak of. So local option sales tax don't help them any. And when you start allowing for, again, it's kind of like school districts that have high property values versus low property values, trying to equalize that has been very difficult over the years. And so you could say it's regional and so forth, but as we start migrating again more towards regional areas, you're kind of leaving the rest of the country and the state apart. So we do have to be a little bit careful about all the local option sales tax, because it also has an aggregate impact to the rest of the economy, the rest of the state. And if we're to try to equalize that, then what do? Do we reduce because people have the option sales tax or not? And so there is a challenge out there, and reason why the legislature has some input into it. And it is a situation where I don't think we have an easy answer, but we'll keep struggling with it. So
thank you, Representative. Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Kreshaw, thanks for bringing the needs of your community forward. I wanted to just kind of couple up with what Chair Marquardt has mentioned, and also Representative Petersburg. What I see going on across the state is really a consolidation of regions at the expense of smaller communities. And as communities grow and they are able to impose 0.25% or 0.5%, having large tax capacities generates huge amounts of revenue. Now, you have a rather modest request with regard to dollars, but we've had a number of lost provisions that have come before the committee that are in the hundreds of millions of dollars, and they have the tax capacity and the ability to generate all of this money in a relatively short period of time. And it's kind of like a black hole phenomenon. They just keep sucking more of the resources into growing and growing and growing these communities bigger and bigger, while small towns lose people because they just gravitate where the stuff is. And so if we're concerned about trying to keep small communities alive and to keep them vibrant, is to the very core of what Representative Marquardt was talking about, what I have been making reference about it with regard to the line of questioning that I started out with, that we may as well just not have any local option sales tax and raise the sales tax statewide to 8 or 8.5% and increase the LGA payments and make sure that every community is a participant in that program rather than singling them out. And anyway, that's just kind of my follow-up. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Yes, Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to make a couple comments since we're talking in general about these taxes that I've found interesting since joining this committee. You know, sales taxes are, according to the tax incidence study and the suits index, the most regressive form of taxation. That means that, you know, low-income people who are cost-burdened in their households, and these are disproportionately like people of color and indigenous people, are hit harder by these taxes. The regressivity of the sales tax is followed closely by the regressivity of the property tax, which, even though we have a property tax refund and other tools in our tax code to make it more equal, you know, as somebody who rents a house, like, I don't get the same benefit in terms of property tax relief as somebody who owns a house does. And when you have the deepest disparity between black people and white people in home ownership rates in the country in Minnesota, then, you know, we are making decisions all the time to uphold a kind of a tax code that hits low-income people harder and harder. I think a lot of us saw with interest this little like graphic that the New York Times developed that showed over the course of the last 40, 50 years, the way that the tax rate paid by the top income earners versus the lowest income earners in our country have crossed, so that now low income people are literally paying a higher tax rate than higher income people. And so I guess I just want us to keep in mind that when we are in this committee and we at the state level and the federal level have made the decision to move away from using progressive taxation tools that do not impact middle class and working class people, that ask the, you know, wealthy and corporate shareholders to pay their fair share, as we've moved away from that, we're making a decision and we're asking our local municipalities to rely more and more on these regressive taxation tools, which are the only ones that they have at their disposal. And so I just, like, we have to just be real. Like, when you argue for local option sales taxes on one end, with one hand, and then when we talk about a modest increase to a very progressive taxation tool and you oppose that on the other, like, that's a decision that we're making, and we're putting our counties and cities and school boards in these positions. Like, these are basic services that need to be provided for people in our community. And because of decisions that we're making in this place, in the other tax committee, and because of decisions that are made on the federal level, we're more and more like relying on really regressive taxes. And so I guess I just wanted to put that out there as long as we're having a larger conversation about local option sales taxes. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Gomez. Not seeing any other member questions. Anybody here from the audience here to testify on behalf of this bill? Representative Kreischer, a quick question for you, specific to the bill itself. There were several mentions to a daycare, but we don't see that in the bill itself. Is that a significant component of this request? Because there's not a direct reference made to that.
I'm going to turn that over to my testifier.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chairman. There. Reviewing our
you didn't see it in the resolution. And I guess I'm just curious if it's just incidental or if it's pretty significant in terms of what that would mean in terms of the overall cost of the project.
It wouldn't be a significant increase in the overall cost of the project. It would be a very small component of the overall facility. The facility itself is about 80,000 square feet, and the daycare component would be roughly 5,000 to 7,000 square feet of that. The opportunity is, if we're building something and have the space to also incorporate in childcare and take care of one of those cost burdens, either the construction or renovation of childcare, we wanted to ensure that we were looking at that as a potential option. And it is something that our community has talked about in numerous engagements that we've had with them around some grant work and community engagement process work that we've been doing with some surveys.
Thank you. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To that point, question. So would the city be running a daycare business?
No. So there are other communities that have community centers that also incorporate child cares that they lease operate those child care centers to those operators, and we would be doing a very similar work or partnering with the school district to operate part of their early childhood education work out of that facility.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you'd be leasing space or you own space that would be daycare-like space, and then businesses or the government-run daycare could come in and lease it from you?
Yes. Then we would need to do that at a very reduced cost, a very subsidized cost to the lease, if not fully subsidized, as we've run cost projections. We've had meetings with multiple providers about potential operating child care centers within our community. When they run their cost analysis, if you factor in any costs that they would have towards debt service, they wouldn't be able to cash flow their operations. It wouldn't work. So our struggle has been we can't get any of those providers to build and operate facilities because they can't pay, they don't have the means to pay for it within the rates that they're collecting from their users.
Representative Drazkowski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. You know, unfortunately, in this state, we've put all kinds of regulations on daycares, and the home daycares that organically, naturally would have grown before have been taken away from you by this big government that's favoring these great big corporate daycares and the government-run ones. And unfortunately, you're seeing it firsthand. We do policy here that puts more money in this early childhood stuff that is part of the cause of this. So our local home-run daycares are evaporating, and that's unfortunate. But thank you for that clarification.
Mr. Chair, if I could add one more
briefly, component. Yes, please.
We do have policies in place that we are looking to support in-home daycares as well as the work that we're trying to do to develop more centers. Like I said, we have 225 shortfall in the city of Little Falls. We know a broad swath of solutions are going to be necessary to help cover that deficit.
Real quick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick comment. So you got to undo the state law that prohibits prickly grass, and then we'll get there.
Representative Hertas, last question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I serve on the Capital Area Architectural Planning Board. This question of bonded facilities for private enterprise has come up, and it's been said in this committee, that in the committee, the other committee that I serve in, that you cannot use bonding for those types of facilities to subsidize or allow private entities to rent that space. Ms. Dalton, do you have any thoughts or comments? You're not the lawyer at the table here, but I think that's correct.
Ms. Dalton.
Or maybe someone else who does know.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hertas, I don't think there's anybody here who would know. I would actually talk to the our bonding attorney, but I can get an answer back for the committee.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Okay, Representative Kreisha, closing comments.
Thank you.
Wonderful. You are welcome back anytime. Gentlemen, thank you for your time today. We really appreciate you being here. With that, Representative Rumbach renews her motion that House File 3661 be laid over for possible inclusion within the division report. And with that, it is laid over. All right. We have one more. Representative Nornes, welcome. Okay, what do we got here? We have House File 3711. Representative Nornes may have a motion to move Representative Nornes's bill before the committee. You're on a roll, Representative Rumbach. All right, stick with it. Representative Rumbach moves that House File 3711 be laid over for possible inclusion within the division report. Hold on a second. We have an author's amendment, the A1. Members, in your package, you should see the A1 amendment. And appears to be technical in nature. Any discussion on the amendment? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye. 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 Opposed. Motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. We have the bill before us. Representative Nornes, welcome to the committee. I see you brought some guests.
I certainly did.
Fantastic.
We're going to have to speed this up a little bit, otherwise You don't go into overtime.
Oh, you've got time. You've got a good 15, 20 minutes. You're good.
Oh, we do. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
That's good.
So with that, please introduce your bill, and then we can turn it over to your testifiers.
Okay. Thank you very much. House File 3711 is another bill dealing with sales tax, local option sales tax, for the community of Fergus Falls. And this is not something new. We've used this method in the past, and it works very well. With three projects, I think, that will be funded through this process. All of them have, I think, regional significance. One is an aquatic center, some regional trails, and improvement at De Lagoon Park. So at this time, I'd like to first, I'm not sure that they're all going to testify, but the city administrator is on the end. That's Andrew Bremseth. We have a city alderman next to him, Tom. What is your last name, Tom?
Roofer.
Oh, I'm sorry. I knew that, but I just wanted to see he knew, make sure he knew. And then the mayor, Ben Shire.
So, gentlemen, welcome to the committee. As you speak, please introduce yourself for the record.
So they'll be the ones doing the testifying today.
Fantastic.
Thank you, Representative. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ben Shire. I'm the mayor of Fergus Falls, and just here to testify in support of House File 3711, which would allow the city of Fergus Falls to go to the voters with three projects for a half-cent sales tax that the community has identified as priorities, and the city council has agreed are regional in significance and would allow Fergus Falls to continue playing the role of a regional center and providing the amenities and the recreational opportunities that we believe are important for people of all ages, but specifically to young families, as make Fergus Falls continue to make Fergus Falls a place where young people, young families raise a family, start a business, and again, maintain that regional status as a community. So I'll turn it over to Councilmember Tom Roofer to talk about one of the projects, and then I can talk about the others briefly.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you very much again for allowing us to come here today. My name is Tom Roofer. I'm a Fergus Falls City Council member. And the first project I want to speak about is our proposed aquatic center. This is a project when I went out door knocking 4 years ago when I ran for office. This was the one that I heard the most about from young families who wanted things for their families to be able to do in Fergus Falls, a way to take advantage of our the beautiful place that we live and then not only give the people of Fergus Falls a place that they can go and play, but also to bring people in from the surrounding area. Whereas now we have water parks in, for instance, Wapiton, North Dakota, right across the border that that a lot of families will go to from Fergus Falls for the day. So our goal is to not only keep those folks playing in Fergus Falls, but also to bring in folks from the surrounding area to take advantage of our wonderful community and amenities.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Mr. Chair and members, and then the other two projects, one of them is a trails, a regional trails network, which would we've have a segment of trail within Fergus Falls down along the Outer Till River that has been identified as a regionally significant, or a trail of regional designation through the Minnesota Parks and Trails. And this project would combine, connect that trail in downtown Fergus with the Central Lakes Trail, which goes all the way down to St. Joseph, where it connects, I believe it's in St. Joseph, connects to the Lake Wobegon Trail. So it serves a very large region in that respect. And as the trailhead for that Central Lakes Trail, which would be connected to the Glacial Edge Trail in downtown Fergus, is in De Lagoon Park, which is a campground, soccer complex, softball, disc golf, and the boat launch. So it serves a number of purposes for the people in not only, again, not only in Fergus Falls, but in the region as that trailhead. And then it would make improvements to the park based on 2014, I believe it's 2014, we did a master plan study of improvements that were needed in that park. Again, so those are the three projects before you, and happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Member questions. Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I noticed in the overview that City of Fergus Falls got a local option sales tax in 2018. Is that correct, a 0.5%?
Mayor, go ahead. Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative. In 2016, it passed the we were successful in the November election of 2016. and that sales tax will expire in August. We expect that sales tax to expire in August of 2022, which is why we're coming before the committee at this point, so that we can do the planning necessary and do the fundraising that we expect that these projects would need so that they can continue with the that sales tax when it expires.
Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you're in Otter Tail County, are you not?
Correct.
And I see Otter Tail County also has a 0.5%. So what would be the total sales tax for 21-22 before this other one expires? What would be the total sales tax applicable in Fergus Falls?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Hertaus. Our local options tax we were proposing would not take effect until the current sales tax in Fergus Falls was expired. So it would not it's a 0.5% for the city and 0.5% for the county currently. It would not be any higher than that. It would just extend the current sales tax that's in place for the city.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. That would be 7 7/8 then?
Yes, 1%. Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
All right. Other member questions? Representative Rumbach, you had a question? No? Okay. I had a quick question. With regards to the Aquatic Center, it looks like you did a little bit of research in terms of some comparables of communities that may have a similar type of facility in terms of what the regional significance was in terms of draw, in terms of attendance. Since the resolution was put together, has there been any further analysis in terms of what you are proposing in terms of what that would mean in terms of attendance beyond what's in here already, or
I don't believe
any more details?
No, Mr. Chair, members, we've been working closely with the city.
I'm sorry. Have you?
I'm sorry. Yep.
Introduce yourself for the record, please.
Yep. Andrew Bremseth, City Administrator. My apologies.
Awesome. Thank you.
We've been working closely with U.S. Aquatics as a consultant on this project, who built the facility in Hutchinson, Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And they're telling us that that's the most comparable community. So I've been in contact with their city administrator on multiple occasions over the last couple of years. And that number within the literature here, I believe it was 45,000 attendees is what they're averaging at their facility over their first 3 years of operations. And we have no reason to believe that that number would be much different in Fergus Falls. There's a lot of similarities between the communities and between the facilities.
Awesome. Thank you. Other member questions? Members from the audience here testify on behalf of this bill. Okay. Representative Nornes, closing comments.
No, I thank you very much for the opportunity to present House Bill 3711, and look forward to this being hopefully included down the line as we conclude this session. So, thank you.
Wonderful. With that, Representative Rumbach renews her motion that House File 3711 be, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion within a division report. And with that, the bill is laid over. Gentlemen, thank you for coming down and visiting with us today. We appreciate your time. Members, before we adjourn, let's see, what do we got here? We got some updates, some news for you. We're going to be here on Wednesday, here in room 5, right? 8 a.m. 8 a.m. Right. This is Wednesday. Wednesday. So in place of the regular tax committee, we will be having our property tax division meeting here, 8 a.m. Wednesday. It's going to be great. Look forward to seeing you all bright and early, maybe even a little bit early. It'll be great. All right. Thank you, everybody. Appreciate your work today, and we are adjourned.